This is the Sun Radio Regional Report. I'm Kevin Connor. We touch on topics of interest and importance to people here in Central Texas. And one thing that's of importance to us and people really all over the world is what's going on in Ukraine now and what we can do locally to help some of the folks in Ukraine. And one of the people that's leading that effort is Hannah Mendyuk. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you so much for asking.
Now, Hannah works for the Heart Hospital, correct?
I do. So I'm actually, I'm the manager for clinical trials, and we have a quite extensive network of clinics and hospitals. So,
where are you from in Ukraine?
So I was born in a town called Podhajce, which is in the Ternopil region. So this is Western Ukraine, and we're about an hour away from Ivano-Frankivsk, Ternopil, and a little bit further, about 2 hours from Lviv. And all three of these cities have unfortunately been hit with bombs. So the airports have been targeted. And as I'm sure everyone's heard, you know, there has been some civilian casualties as well, which is a big issue at the moment.
Right. And your family is in your hometown?
Yes. So my family primarily is in my hometown. However, I do have family members in Ivano-Frankivsk and Lviv. We did have some very close loved ones in Kyiv. Thankfully, they were able to get out, especially before the roads were hit. So we're incredibly thankful that, you know, our family is safe and in constant communication. That was definitely a little bit of a rough spot when the war first started. Yes. And cellular communication has been difficult. However, I just want to commend, you know, with the country, we've had a lot of assistance from mobile companies who have made it. Actually, they gave all access for free for the citizens of Ukraine. So we've been able to communicate with our family.
That's good. When did you come to the United States and why did you come to the United States?
So my parents actually moved here first. They kind of, you know, established a little bit of a home. We first moved to Chicago. I came here in 2000. So I've been here for quite a while, but for a portion of every year, you know, up until college, I would go and I would actually sit for either exams and kind of finish up the school year both here and in Ukraine. It was primarily education based because we weren't sure, you know, if I would ever go back home over there. But I did choose to stay in the States. However, outside of, you know, my parents and my siblings, my whole family is there. So we visit very frequently.
And how long have you been in Austin?
So I've only been in Austin less than 4 months at this point.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. So this was, I actually moved in December and then, you know, February 26th, the war hit. Yeah, I haven't been here long, but I have to say it was incredible to see how much the community has just worked together. And especially in the United States here, it's just so, so humbling and so overwhelming to see the amount of support and how America is standing behind Ukraine right now. Yes. So this was a very good opportunity to meet people, to make friends. So,
yeah. Hannah Mendyuk, again, who lives here in Austin now, works in the research at the Heart Hospital of Austin. And like you said, you get here and all of a sudden, boom, you're just getting established here and boom, Russia attacks your home.
Russia attacks
your home country. And, I don't know if most people had any really understanding of the relationship between Ukraine and Russia before this all happened. And it's been a tense relationship for a long, long time.
It has been. So Ukraine was actually part of the Soviet Union. So my whole family at the time, you know, this was before anybody came to the States. So they all lived through that. My great-grandparents and my grandmother, so my maternal grandmother, they were actually, during that time, you know, sent to Siberia, to the camps. There were work camps. They were actually, the reason they were sent is they were helping with medicine. So some of the local community, there were a lot of rebels in the forest, and my grandmother's side of the family, they were taking them in and taking care of them. And then the neighbors kind of sold them out. Whenever you ask the story from her, she's always very proud to announce that all the soldiers made it out. They were able to get them out of the house. However, the Russian kind of troops, they did find bloody bandages, which was incriminating enough to send them over.
It's interesting. You say the neighbors sold them out. There are varying opinions amongst Ukrainians about what how to deal with Russia. There are some Ukrainians that say, hey, just do what they want and we'll be safe.
Yes. So this is kind of where a little bit of a division with the West and the East comes together. The West has been, this is where I was raised, has always been the more kind of pro-Ukrainian, pro-nationalist side. On the East, especially during the Soviet Union, there were a lot of families that were transplanted from Russia, and they were actually sent to live there and to kind of, you know, have generations. And this was supposed to be a unification of the countries. Right. So basically, they had Russian citizens who were chosen or who volunteered to go live in Ukraine, along mostly the eastern border, which shares a border with Russia. Yeah, so, you know, this is like 2-3 generations later where their grandkids are here. And the thing is, the mentality kind of stuck around, you know, that this was a collaboration of the nations. However, the issue was Russia kind of wasn't looking at it for a collaboration perspective after we gained independence. It was more like, this is our land, this is our people, and they've been, there's been a lot of push for territory. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of where that kind of discontent comes from. However, I would say ever since the start of this war, we have seen the country united like never before, really, you know, not in my lifetime. And I think in a very long time, this is the atrocities that are happening. You know, it's it crosses any political beliefs, any political borders. At this point, it's just, you know, wrong or right.
Well, we're talking again with Hannah Mendyuk, who's been here stateside for about 20 years, but a recent arrival in Austin, just 4 months. And then the war breaks out in your home country. And did that bring Ukrainians in the Austin area together?
It absolutely did. I actually want to say that I don't think that the Ukrainians who lived here, and I'm not including myself because I'm quite new to this, but we didn't even realize how much of a community was truly present. I want to say about 80% of my current friends at this point, and we see each other multiple times a week, I met at the protests. Yes, absolutely. Our protests, you know, it's done daily in front of the Capitol, but especially on weekends. So the Ukrainians kind of gather in front of the Capitol building, and we have seen so much of the community come and help us and just support us there, and just physically and asking us, you know, what they could do to help. And so as I mentioned a little bit, we're doing a tremendous medical drive where we're collecting medical supplies that we have a direct kind of personal channel that goes through Warsaw. So we're able to give it directly to medical volunteers on the Ukrainian side, closer to kind of Mariupol, and it's being spread out from there. So it's been a very incredible effort to see the community come together for stuff like that.
Do you have any idea how many Ukrainians live in the Austin area?
Idea-wise, I would say we have more than 1,000.
Okay.
Potentially more if you expand a little bit outside of the Austin range. But I know there is a very, like a quite sizable community in Dallas, Texas. Uh-huh. So we're seeing a collaboration. And there's actually nonprofits in San Antonio. So we've gotten in touch with them, and we're really building up our community in Austin. With the refugees coming in, for example, we're actually right now talking about having kind of a little bit of a school system going on for Sundays, like in the weekends, because a lot of kids, we have found, you know, Ukrainian family kids, they don't really have access to that community. And as well as right now, we're going to have refugees coming in. So the children of refugees, you know, just to kind of help them get some social, social time in, and also teach the local children who are already present more about their culture, more about the language. And I think that really speaks to the size of the community, that this is something that we're exploring right now.
Well, speaking of the culture, there is an activation this month, a Ukrainian cultural exhibition and also an art auction to benefit people in Ukraine. It's called Volya. And what does Volya mean in Ukrainian?
Vola actually means freedom. And the cool thing is, if you've seen that little Ukrainian trident, right. It's the logo on a lot of things. The trident itself actually spells out the four letters that form the word Vola.
I read it as Volya, but it's actually Vola.
Yes. Okay. So think of it more as a IA at the end.
Okay.
So Vola. Yeah, there we have go. A whole letter specifically for that sound.
And there are two groups that are benefiting from proceeds from this. The first one,
correct,
Revived Soldiers Ukraine. And this is an organization that you worked with, yes, several years before.
Yes. So, I mean, the skirmishes, they really started in 2014. That's when fighting first broke out on the eastern border. And I think people have been a little bit surprised, and everyone's been overall impressed with how Ukraine is handling the current crisis. You know, we're definitely giving back as good as we get. But primarily, that is because, you know, we've had, I think it's six drafts. We've had six military drafts since 2014. So like 95% of our army has seen active combat, because in 2014, when we had to annex Crimea, so we didn't do too well there. And the army was just thoroughly unprepared for the attacks that came. So we've made sure that we're prepared this time around.
Right. The attacks came in so many different parts of the country now. I remember there was stuff in the news about Crimea when Russia took it over in 2014, but not to the extent of now. This is different. This is countrywide, the whole Ukraine.
It is countrywide. I really want to speak, you know, with the Russian attack and just the mentality behind this and the attempt to, and I quote this, the denationalize the Ukrainian people. This is truly a genocide, and frankly, the intention is to bring back the Soviet Union. You know, that's kind of what the efforts are. Again, we gained independence, and they didn't really. It's the feeling overall is that that was not well received move, according to the Russian Federation. So,
yeah,
they are very much, there's, like I said, a lot of territorial disputes, and culturally speaking, there's been a clash.
And Ukraine was easier to attack, I guess. I'm not trying to project the Russians' plans here, but because it was not a NATO country, other former Soviet states like Latvia and Estonia, they're in NATO.
Yes.
So they're protected by an agreement.
Yes.
The North Atlantic Treaty Organization, they're protected by treaty, and Ukraine is not part of NATO. There's a different approach to what the United States and the European countries can do.
Yes.
For fear of starting a larger
retaliation.
War.
Yes.
Yeah. So it sometimes seems like while we're supporting with military support, ammunition and arms and financial support, but we can't put our boots on the ground for fear of starting World War III.
That is absolutely correct.
How do Ukrainian people feel about that? Do they understand that?
We do understand that. And I want to say, above all, and this is me speaking to my family, and I speak to them daily, they're so, so thankful for the support we're receiving in terms of military support, like the weapons, the finances right now. And so many people have been donating right now. There's medical supplies, which are in just great need. And I'm not even speaking to, specifically of the soldiers, you know, especially the fighting against kind of the northwest border, you know, by Belarus, by Mariupol, and especially, you know, by the Kyiv region. So the village of Irpin has been raised to the ground, and actually Revived Soldiers Ukraine had one of their major clinics there. So
Right. That's
gone.
The group,
yes,
that you're trying to help here, Revived Soldiers
Absolutely.
Ukraine.
Like I said, and you know, people are fighting in Bucha. Everybody's heard about Bucha right now, what's going on there. And I'm speaking of fighting, but I want everybody to kind of envision the civilian casualties that are going on there. And all these medical drives that, you know, I'm coordinating, and with the help of the Ukrainian community, which has just come forward to such a tremendous extent. I'm not the only one collecting these meds. I just want to make that clear. This
Right.
is a whole group of people that are coming together.
Right.
But the civilians that are suffering and dying, and kind of leading into the second organization we're supporting, which is the Voices of Children, or Holosid Dite. Again, refugees, children, we're seeing children, you know, dug out of rubble at bomb sites. And it's insane just to think about the loss of life, the tremendous loss of life that is happening right now. It's really important, you know, like I said, we're so, so thankful for the support of the United States and for other countries. But I want everybody to realize, you know, this doesn't end with Ukraine, and the threat is real. And we very well understand that there is no grudge held against, you know, not having troops on the ground. A lot of countries have made it okay for volunteers to go and fight, you know. That's a very good move. I think that's an important move, and that's without kind of you know, contracting anything and really staking that claim, like, hey, we're sending soldiers in. We fully understand that. But again, keep in mind, you know, I read this quote, I think on Twitter Sunday, but somebody put it very, very well. If Russia lays down their weapons, there is no war. If Ukraine lays down their weapons, there's no Ukraine.
We're talking with Hannah Menjuk, moved to Austin 4 months ago. She's a medical professional here in town, but has been in the United States for about 20 years. And she is one of the, the people in the Austin-based Ukrainian coalition who are trying to help revive soldiers, Ukraine, and voices of children. And the event is called Volya. Better?
Yes. Voila. That was very good.
Which means freedom. And there's a cultural exhibition and a silent auction to benefit people in Ukraine, which is centered at a place called Dorf, D-O-R-F, which is it's an art gallery, but also kind of an event space here in South Austin, just down the street, literally from our radio station in the Stastny Manchac area. And you can go to their website and find out more about them. The first thing about this that I found interesting, you're going to show people more about Ukrainian culture.
It's a celebration of culture. And you know what? Right now there's dark times going on. And I think it's very important, number one, to remind ourselves in the Ukrainian community, but also to share with the world, like, what kind of beautiful culture this is. And everybody's seen on the news how people are banding together. Our soldiers, you know, they're fighting, but you see videos of them also singing. You know, we're so proud to be Ukrainian. And especially now, I am so, so proud of my people, of my culture. And Ukraine's very, very old. You know, it started with quite literally just nomadic tribes of people that then united and formed the, you know, Kiev and Rus, and then kind of expanded from there. We're talking thousands of years. Like, this country is very old, and we have such a long history, such a beautiful culture, and it's worth sharing.
Would it be safe to say that Ukraine might have been where Easter eggs first came from?
I'm not sure if that was where they first came from, but we definitely developed the art for it.
Is it called Pesanki?
Pesanke, yes. You said it right, just the enunciation on the first part. Pesanke.
Pesanke.
And I will actually be teaching a class on those at the exhibit. So
this is traditional egg painting, and really beautiful egg painting.
It uses actually beeswax. We trap colors under hot wax. So we use these little drip tools almost to actually paint the wax over the eggs, dye it, and then paint more wax, which will trap that color. So you see this myriad of designs that's come out, and I've had classes, and I've actually taught some of my American friends that live here, and everybody, it's a very unique form of art. So I think it's very enjoyable. And if anybody wants to learn more, you know, we're here, we're teaching.
All right. And there's also about 50 artists, some Ukrainian artists that are based here and others who are offering their works through a silent auction, again, to benefit Ukraine. And I'll put links up on our website about how to find out more about this event. But the silent auction begins May 11th. The actual event is on Saturday the 14th.
That is correct.
And again, it's called Volya Freedom.
That was good.
Good. I'm getting there.
Yes, you are.
It's not an easy language for Americans to pick up because it has a different alphabet.
It does have a different alphabet. However, for anybody who is curious about learning, I want to say it's not as difficult as you think, because once you learn the letters, the language itself is incredibly phonetic.
Oh, really?
Like, one of my best friends, she's Mexican. She can quite literally, she can read in Ukrainian almost perfectly. We're getting to the point where she can speak it. You know, we're still working on that, but she can read it fine.
We're talking with Hannah Menjuk, again, who's based here in Austin and has been for just a few months, but has been based in the United States for a long time. And we're talking about Volya. One thing I wanted to ask you about is the president of Ukraine, Zelensky. How do you see him? How do you feel about him?
I think he has stepped up to the challenge like nobody would have expected. I'm sure a lot of people have heard about his history. He was a comedian.
A comedian and an actor. And then he played the part of a guy who was thrust into the presidency, which is amazing.
That was literally his comedy skit. It's quite ironic, actually. And at the point, you know, when it was the choice to vote for him, I want to say we all really approached it kind of, he was the lesser evil, so to speak. Ukraine has had a bit of a bad rap with our presidential candidates.
Right.
So at this point, we're just like, oh, this guy can't do too much damage, you know? When it came down to it, you know, the war hit and nobody was expecting that out of him. I want to say, I think he's the first president we've had that didn't leave when it got, you know, when the times got hot. And we have a song. It's very, very popular among the soldiers right now. Unfortunately, I cannot say the name of it. There is a curse word in it.
Okay.
But it's basically the opening lines to the songs are even saying, like, I didn't vote for you when the election happened, but by God, I would lay down my life for you right now. That's the mentality of a lot of Ukrainians right now. Like our president right now, the way he's acting, we're all so, so incredibly thankful and so proud of him.
Yeah. He has, like you said, risen to the occasion.
I mean, I don't have any complaints right now, realistically.
And Hannah Mendyuk and her friends here in town are trying to do what they can to help. Again, they're helping Voices of Children and Revived Soldiers Ukraine with this cultural exhibition, and silent auction. And I'll put links to all the information on this. And I just hope it's over as soon as possible.
Totally. You know, it's with the sooner
Ukraine,
the better.
With Ukraine still intact, as you said.
Yes.
Russians put their guns down. The war is over. Ukrainians put their guns down. Ukraine is over.
This is exactly true. And, you know, it's interesting. I have a 4-year-old nephew out there and he doesn't understand so much what's going on. But just to hear him speak about how annoyed he is that the house keeps jumping, you know, it's very, and, you know, we see this from the children's perspective as much as from the adults. And no kid should have to go through that. That's why we're fighting so hard, because no kid should have to go through that. Some of my friends actually, you know, the ones who were born here, and just speaking in terms of, you've seen the refugees, you know, I mean, the civilians, they go into the metro stations to hide. And the fact is Ukraine developed the metro stations specifically to serve as bomb shelters. So that kind of foresight where we knew this is something that might be necessary. The Kyiv metro stations, they're between 500 and 800 meters underground. That's almost a full kilometer. You know, they're deep.
Right.
And they were built like that on purpose. They're specifically built to serve as that bomb shelter. They're huge. If you go into them, the actual metro station is incredible, like high ceilings, very wide, because it's intended to shelter an amount of people. Every family has a bomb cellar. You know, they have a dugout kind of in the yard. We use that as normal cellars, but the intent is you could go and hide if you needed to. And the country for generations has learned to prepare for this kind of stuff because we knew it was coming, realistically. Some of my friends here, they're like, wow, if this happened here, we would never, you know, we would never be prepared. We don't have that kind of preparation available. And the only thing I can think of is you don't have to. And that's the beautiful thing. Like the fact that in America, here in the States, we don't have to grow up knowing those skills, knowing how to get away from a grenade, knowing how to put together a gun. That's not a bad thing. That is what we're fighting for, because we want our children to live that kind of, to have that kind of reality around them, that they don't have to know where the bomb shelter is.
Hannah, it's great to talk to you. Thank you for everything that you do. And we will spread the word on this, on Voya Freedom in Ukrainian, on all the good things that they're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to speak with you.
Your comments on today's program are certainly welcome. Your thoughts on topics that you'd like to hear addressed on this program, certainly welcome as well. Send that message to me at studio@sunradio.com. I'm Kevin Connor. I'll get all the information about Voya that Hannah has told us about up on our website just as soon as I can. Thank you for listening to the Sun Radio Regional Report.